This is Dr. George Payton in his teaching on Bible translation. This is session number 5, Roles in Translation.
We've talked about the translation process, all the different steps that are involved, and we talked about the different people in the translation process. We talked about a consultant. We talked about the translators. And there's a third role that's sometimes used in Bible translation, and that's the role of the facilitator, or it's also called an advisor. And so what do each of these people do in the translation process? Does their work overlap? Do they have responsibilities that are shared, or are they distinct? And how do they all help to produce a good translation? So let's just remind ourselves what a translator is. A translator is typically the native speaker. And again, I will use this term translator to refer to the person who speaks the local language into which the Bible is being translated. Okay, so our purpose is to discuss these three participants or players or people with roles in the Bible translation process. The national translator, translation advisor, we'll call them, and the translation consultant. In the old days when I got started back in the long time ago, people that did translation were called translators. So I was called a translator because I worked in translation. Or a field linguist means you go out and you do linguistics among local people. And the local people were called, first they were called language helpers, then they were called mother tongue translators. But if they're the speakers, they are the translators, and I am not. So in that regard, I work in translation, but they are the ones speaking the local language, so they get the title of translators. And this is how I'm using it. Sometimes today, even now, people will use the term translator when they're talking. Oh, you're a translator. Okay. And some Bible agencies, they say, well, we don't really do translation. We just help out the translation getting done, but we're not really involved in translation. That is kind of true, but kind of not true. And they say, well, we give guidance and advice, but we don't actually do translation, which is actually not the case. But you have this role of a person who gives advice or guidance. You also have a consultant. What's the difference between those two people? Are they the same? Or are they different? And if so, how are they different? So clarity is needed, and this is what this presentation is going to clarify, is the differences between the advisor and the consultant. And the problem is, in English, to advise and to consult tend to be, that's pretty much the same thing. So what is the difference between them? Okay? Reminding ourselves of what translators' duties are. And this is what they need to be good at. We have non-translation skills, as we said, computer skills. Generally, just using a computer. Specific software, like some kind of email software, some kind of word processing software. Word is the most common one. Other non-translation software. Skills in the language of wider communication, study skills. Translation duties include understanding the passage. Again, study skills, critical thinking, using the Bible resources, using translation-specific software, knowing how to draft, using translation principles and applying them as you draft. And remember all the difficulties we said of drafting. Okay, keep that in mind. There's a a program called Adapted. Anyways, if you want to take the translation in language A and put it into a similar language B, what is that process and being able to do that? Ability to look at your own work and think, okay, I can improve this. This is my first try, but I think I can do better. So you do that, and then you give it to someone else, and they give you feedback. At the same time, they give you their first try, and you give them feedback. And so this thing of working with others on a team, giving feedback to each other, is a part of the process that translators should be able to do. Checking for accuracy, so looking at the literal version of the source text, and reading through, making sure you didn't leave anything out. Later on, proofreading, spelling, other things that you would normally expect when you write something. Okay, so that's the translator, the person that speaks the local language. Okay, we have another role called translation advisors. And translation advisors are always also called translation facilitators. Not every organization and not every part in the Wycliffe SIL world has a role for translation advisors. And where this translation advisor fits into the organizational structure of a particular group can vary from one organization to another. In bringing this up about translation advisors, this is a chance to raise awareness of issues in the translation process that may or may not have been discussed previously. And I've had discussions with people in earlier years, 2015, 2010, and the question was, well, what do we need advisors for? The local people know how to do this. Opinions differ on that. Okay. So, sometimes this person is called an exegetical advisor. Sometimes they're called a translation specialist. Sometimes they're called a translation facilitator. Let me just say, calling them an exegetical advisor gives the impression, wrongly in my opinion, that that's all that they do. They do the exegesis, and then, oh well, you're on your own. Actually, they go way beyond that. And so I don't tend to prefer the term exegetical advisor because you end up helping with many other things. So what does this person do? This next quote is from the SIL organization website. We're going to skim through this. You can stop it and read it if you like. Typically are not mother tongue speakers, which is true, part of a team, training coworkers, contributing to translation theory and practice, exegesis, linguistics, that's a lot. And this is the short definition on the SIL website. This one is a lot longer. Oh my goodness. This person is Superman with all these different skills. They have to know everything about everything. In addition to frequently, so translation specialists, frequently teach and train local community members in translation principles and procedures. I underline it because they always do that. I can't think of any time when you don't do that. Because if you take someone who grew up in the church, knows their language, knows their culture, but have had no training in translation, how are they going to get the training? And they get the training by being trained by a person who's trained on how to train them. And so that would be this facilitator slash advisor. It also says they are often called to manage overall aspects of the language development program. Let's talk about that more in just a second. Okay. So what skills do they need to have? Well, they should have linguistic skills to some extent. Do they know the grammar? If they don't actually research the grammar, can they read a report from someone else who researched the grammar? And when they say this is an SOV language, they should know what SOV language means. So when they use insider language and they read that in the report, they should be able to understand what it is. They should know what some of these other linguistic terms are. They should have translation skills. So they should understand how people communicate. By the way, we're going to get to that tomorrow, to the next lecture. They should understand the process of transferring meaning. They should understand how to apply translation principles to a translation difficulty. They should understand different translation styles. For example, something that's more literal or more, let's call it, form-based, retaining the form of the original language versus trying to communicate more in a meaningful way. They should understand the project goals. Skopos means aim or goal. And they should also understand who the project is trying to target, who the target audience is. Because remember what we said before in the previous discussion, who you're translating it for dictates a lot about how you word your translation. How much do they know? How much do you need to simplify? How much can you say straight in a direct way? How much do you need to put into a footnote or add other information? Your target audience is probably one of the biggest factors to consider when you're trying to do that. So the translation advisor should understand who the target audience is. And then they can talk to the translation team, is this going to fit those people? Okay, some other skills for a translation advisor. They should have good Bible background knowledge. So they should have biblical skills. Ideally, they should know at least one of the biblical languages. If they're working in the New Testament, they should probably know some Greek. They may not be PhDs in Greek, but they should know some Greek. If they're working in the Old Testament, they should know some Hebrew. Exegesis and hermeneutics. They should be able to break down the text. They should be able to come up with a good interpretation of the text. All of those are Bible skills. Exegesis and hermeneutics is where you land when you come up with an interpretation. They should know the language and the culture. If they don't know the target language, that's okay. It can still work. I did happen to learn the language, the Orma language. I speak the Orma language because I was working in a group where there were no Christians. And so I wanted to be able to communicate well myself before moving into the translation phase. That's not always possible. Sometimes we have advisors working with two or three languages. There's no way in the world that you're going to learn two or three languages. But you can be of service to those languages and to the language teams. But you should understand the language of wider communication. You should understand the trade language in that country. Again, speaking, hearing, reading, and writing. Especially if the Bible that they're using as their base is that language. Understand, at least in general, writing patterns and grammatical patterns of the receptor language or the target language. And if you can speak it, that's great. If you can't, you should at least become familiar with it. And this happens where people get into a language project and it's really hard at first, but after they work with a translation team and they're editing translated texts over and over and over, by about 6 months or a year, they get to the point where they can actually read a lot of the text without any help. And then, by the way, what is this word here? Oh, it's this. Okay, great. And I've gone into consultant checks. And I ask the team, can you explain the grammar of this sentence? And they said to the advisor, can you explain it to him? And so this European woman, she said, okay, this is how it is. And so she explained to me the grammar. She understood that because why? She had worked with it over and over and over. So this is something that the advisors need to develop. Understanding the culture of the people, and to develop cultural competence. Cultural competence is a buzzword in higher education probably for the last 5 to 10 years. Everyone is talking about being competent in another culture. It doesn't mean being culturally aware. It does to a point, but being culturally aware does not cover the whole picture. Culturally aware means, oh, I know that people usually don't do this. There was a mission trip that once went from our school to Europe, And they went to Germany. And while they were there, there was a group of the college students together with a German person. And they went across the street, and a car was coming. And the car came really close to hitting a couple of the guys because they were walking out in the street. And the car slammed on their brakes, and they jumped back. And the driver jumped out, and the German guy and the driver started having this argument. And then the guy got in his car and drove off. And they said, well, what's going on with that? And the German guy said, well, actually, here in Germany, the driver has the right of way, not the pedestrian. And you're taking your life into your hands if you challenge the cars and go out in the street. Well, these American boys didn't like that. They thought that was stupid. And so they intentionally, after that, would go into the street and challenge these cars. They knew it. So cultural sensitivity, they knew the right thing to do, but they refused to do it. Cultural competence means you lean into their culture and you do things their way, because that way you're showing you appreciate their culture and you want to function in that society in an appropriate way. So cultural competence means doing what good people do, avoiding what bad people do, so that we can be seen as at least good outside people. Okay. All right, so one thing about the translation advisor, they should be good at training, or they should at least learn how, and they can learn and grow and develop their training skills. And we have to understand that we're training adults, we're not training children. And these adults have background, knowledge, experience, and the way that you train adults is very different than teaching children in the elementary school classroom, or even teaching high school students, or to some extent, even teaching college students. Adults are there because they want to learn. Adults are there because they want to gain a particular skill. Adults are there because this is a part of their job. And so you build on what they know. And adults, they tend to like to figure things out. So the more you tell them, it's like, well, I didn't want you to tell me. I wanted you to tell me how to do it. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we'll just tell you, spoiler alert, there's no YouTube video that's going to tell you how to translate. There just isn't. Sorry. Okay. And if there is one, be very careful. All right. So training other people is a skill that needs to be developed. And being able to identify the skills that the translators have and then focus on teaching each one of them their skills. Okay. So what do they do? What do advisors do? They assist in training the translators in computer skills. This could include typing skills, software. Be a resource person if something goes wrong. My thing won't print. Ah, I don't know what to do. No, there's no IT guy there. There's you there. And you're the advisor, so you get called to do that. Linguistic training. So if this report is written, then the advisor would then help the team to understand the ins and outs of the grammar of their language. If the person did the linguistic report, all the better for them to explain and help the team to understand the grammar. You might be called on to help with the orthography. Orthography is another word for alphabet. And how do we make this particular sound? How do we come up with a symbol for it in our alphabet system? Train and enhance the team's knowledge of translation principles. This is the big thing that we do, is the application of translation principles, not just simply knowing about them. And which one to use when and why. Another thing is a big thing, accessing the biblical resources that are primarily in English. And this is something that, in one sense, it's worth its weight in gold. This is a precious, precious contribution to the team by helping them to access these translation resources. Some of them are straight-up commentaries. Sometimes we have specific translation resources that are written for translators, but they're in English. So even if it's in simplified English, they still need help reading it and understanding it. Okay, and then another thing is, as you're working through the text together, as you're trying to understand what this passage means, you're talking about exegesis, you're talking about interpretation. You look at two or three or four different versions in English. You look at two or three or four versions in the language of wider communication, if it's there. I remember when I was translating the book of Genesis. So back in the day, we didn't have Bibles on computer. Okay? So we had hard copy Bibles. So I had English Bibles here. I had Swahili Bibles over here. I had Greek and Hebrew over here. And then there were two or three similar languages to the one that we were doing who already had a Bible. Not exactly the same, but it was close. So I had them over here. So I'm working simultaneously in six different languages. And you get there by comparing this one to that one to that one and saying, okay, this is what we think it means. Great. How do we word it? Then we would look at those related languages and say, okay, they said it like this. Can you say it that way? Not exactly, but close. So then they would get us close. And so then learning how to do that, learning that whole process, doing it again and again and again, these are things that the advisor trains the team on how to do. Some other duties, actually helping them produce a draft or helping them revise the draft, helping them to produce a back translation. So if you start in English and then you go into the Orma language, the consultant wants something in English. It should pretty close reflect what the translation says. I went to one group to check their work, and the English version of their translation looked exactly like the NIV. Sorry, guys, you did a cut and paste of the NIV. I don't want a cut and paste of the NIV. I want to know what your translation says. So I would have them give me a verbal back translation all the way through. So an advisor can help them to produce a translation that really helps the consultant to see what is in the translation. Okay, another thing that the advisor does, it's another pair of eyes to look at the translation, to go over it, to make recommendations before the translation or that particular text goes to the consultant. And so it's a check and balance piece in place where the advisor adds another level of, now I don't want to say scrutiny, but adds another level of fine-tuning of the text. Okay, those are all primary duties. Secondary duties include learning the national language. Yes, they should. Local language, like I said, it depends. Do they even have opportunity to do that? Sometimes when we have people go to the field and the translation project is just starting, then maybe they do have an opportunity. When I was working in southern Tanzania, the translation teams were in place. And then we would get people coming from either Europe or some other place to help with the translation team. The translation team is in the middle of the book of Mark, and they need help right now. And there wasn't really time for the advisor to learn their language. But the advisor did learn Swahili, and so they were able to communicate well in Swahili. And that's why you need to know the national language. Learning to function in the national culture. It's not a said thing, but again, that's that cultural competence idea. As much as possible, learning about the local culture, learning about the local worldview. Why is this important? It's particularly important when we get to the view of the community of the unseen world. And my opinion is, from my experience, that everyone has a view of the unseen world, but they don't talk about it. And we had this come up when we did a workshop on how do we translate key biblical terms in these 10 languages from our office in Tanzania. And so I would ask him, so what do you guys believe about the unseen world? What is in the unseen world? Well, you've got God. Okay, great. You've got the spirits of dead people. Okay, ancestral spirits. Okay, anything else? Yeah, there's spirits that are bad. And for lack of a better word, we call it evil spirits. So we would begin to get a picture of what they view the unseen world as, because all of those things are mentioned somewhere in the Bible. And so we need to know what that unseen world is so that we can actually get to the right terminology for these biblical terms. So understanding the worldview is a very important thing. Getting to know the local communities is always a plus. We happened to live in a village, and we spoke the language, and our kids played with their kids, and so we learned the local people. If you live in a city, and the language area is outside that city, making regular visits, it helps build their relationship with the local people, with the pastors and others. And so not everyone is able to do this, but if they can, it certainly is a plus. And to be advocates for the translation team. Hey, we're working on your translation. Would you like to come help us in this checking session? Or can we come and show you what we've done? So a way to get the word out, a way to draw people's interest in. All right. So should an advisor be a supervisor? I've seen places where the advisor was not. And I've seen places where the advisor is. And so what I'm telling you is from my experience and what I've seen, it could be different in different places. One of the things is if you don't have anyone who's supervising the whole team, no one is skilled in that, then you need someone to keep things going. You need to have someone connecting to the sponsoring organization. If it's a missionary organization like Wycliffe or SIL, then this person is reporting to the SIL administration about how the project is going on, things like that. They know the local situation. They know the translation team. All those are good reasons to have the translation advisor be a supervisor. Cons. Number one, the more you get into administration, I don't care what your field is, the more you get into administration, the less time you have to devote to the actual work that you were there to do. It's true in education. The more you do administration, the less time you have to teach, and you end up teaching one class, and you used to teach three, and you really miss the classroom, but there's all this admin work that you have to do. So it just takes up more time. And in taking up more of your time, the translators don't have you available when they need you to help them to work through problems. So that timely training that you can do when you're an advisor gets eaten up with other responsibilities, and that's a detriment, that's a con. Another thing is, in places where the translation work is done, we often work in hierarchical societies where you have leaders and you have non-leaders, and there's a clear gap there. With America, everything is flat. Everything is level. We're on the same level. So you go up to the president of DIU here, Dallas International University, and it's, hey, Scott, how you doing? Oh, great, George. That probably wouldn't happen in some of these other countries. You'd say, hello, Mr. President, how are you? So that level of respect is there. Also, when someone is of a higher level than you, there is a friendship gap where you are not really in a position to get to know that person well because you are of a lower status. And it goes the other way too. A person of higher status doesn't make friends with the people that work under them. So there's this hierarchical level that's there, and that does inhibit the relationship between the translation advisor and the translation team. So we need to be aware that that's the situation. And then the question is, do we want that kind of situation for the translation advisor? Or should someone else do the administration and let the translation advisor be there to help the team? So it's a choice. People need to work it out for themselves. And again, what is the structure in that organization and how does it work? So having a translation advisor can be seen as a paternalistic way of maintaining control from the outside. And we need to be very careful with that. If we want the local community to embrace and to take hold of and to run with the translation project, that it's theirs and not ours, having someone else other than the translation advisor be in charge is probably going to move in that direction. I don't want to say too much more about that, but the caution needs to be taken there. And we need to be sure that we're not communicating something that says the Westerner or the outside person should always be in charge. We need to be very careful with that. Okay, translation advisors, how are they trained? When I got started, it was learn as you go. Figure it out. And the thing about figuring it out, it fits in with most people's learning style. We want to figure things out. The problem is, it took me probably 6-7 years to figure it out on my own. That's a long time. Do we have time to do that? In today's world, when people are trying to accelerate Bible translation, figure it out on your own as you go, seems to be less viable today than it used to be. One question is, are there any in-country training programs? And I know of, personally, two. In all of the translation world that I've heard of, I know of two in-country training programs for advisors. That means with 200 countries around the world, there's a whole lot more work that could be done in-country. All right, what about pre-field training? I'll give you a plug for Dallas International. I think that we have the only training program specifically designed for translation advisors. Something to keep in mind. So the more training that the advisor gets in how to mentor and how to facilitate before they get into this role, the more quickly they can get up to speed once they get there. And the more quickly they can get up to speed, the more quickly the team can get up to speed. And so even if there's no in-country training program, if they get training before they go overseas, they're way ahead of where they would be if they just had to land in the country and start figuring out on their own. And we taught a translation advising class at Biola, and my students would write back to me and say, you know what, your class was just like what we do every day in translations. We're so glad that we got the chance to get that training. So this helps the advisor, and the ripple effect is it helps the team better and sooner. And the team ends up producing better work. Okay, so we have a consultant and we have an advisor. So what's the difference? Okay, so consultants, they do mentor translators and facilitators. Translators being the mother tongue speakers, facilitators usually are people from either another language in the country or from another country. Do advisors do that? Yes, they do. They work on mentoring translators. Translation consultant. Remember that they're there to check the accuracy and check other things. And so they're product-oriented, but also they help people. The advisor, on the other hand, is people-oriented. They're there to build up the skills of the team. At the same time, they're working on the project and seeing if the product is good. And so it's both. It's a matter of focus. The advisor focuses more on the training side, and the consultant focuses more on the product side. Okay, how often does the translation consultant visit a translation team? Roughly twice a year. So a translation team will work on a certain amount of translation, maybe one book, maybe a couple of smaller books, and then the consultant will come in and check their work, and then they'll revise it, and then they'll work on the next chunk of books and work that they're doing. And so the consultant comes twice a year. And the main goal of a consultant to come and check is to finish editing that part of the translation. Does training happen during that time? It can. But remember, the goal is to get through that portion of Scripture, and so you want to keep that going. And they pick up a little bits of training as they go along, but there's not extended periods where they work on training. Unless the consultant happens to stay long enough, maybe they stay an extra few days, then they can work on certain training activities with the team. And what about the advisor? The advisor, typically, advisors live in the community, or they live in close proximity to the translators, and they can have regular interaction. Is this always the case? Not necessarily. Some countries, the advisors can't leave the city, and maybe the translator lives in the home village. They can come to the city and work together, but they work regularly together to the extent that they have regular interaction. So it's occasional interaction versus regular. The consultant usually is not right on location where the translation work is being done. They're usually maybe in the capital city. Sometimes they're in a whole another country. And particularly during COVID, that's really heightened the whole work of translation consulting to be done via Zoom and being done via a distance. And so a lot of the consultants live in their home countries, and then they consult with the team. It's best if they are there first and know the team in person before consulting via Zoom. Consulting via Zoom is challenging both for the consultant and for the consultant receivers, the translation team. And the reason is you can only stay on a Zoom meeting for so long. It's really, really tiring. And is there a time gap? What is a time gap? If a person from Dallas is consulting with someone in Latin America, okay, it might be an hour or two difference. I was consulting with a team in Tanzania, and it was an 11-hour difference, and I was consulting during their daytime, which meant my nighttime, and we can do it for like for 4 hours, and I just say, guys, I'm done. And at the end of this two-week period, I felt like I'd been on jet lag for the entire 2 weeks. And I'm just going, man, I'm beat. So I just like sat around and just watched the grass grow for the next next few days just to get my brain back. So that distance is something that's a reality that we just have to deal with. It's not ideal. When I was in southern Tanzania, I was a consultant. I was a trainer. And I was right there. And so they would say, hey, we finished these chapters of Mark. Can you check them for us? And I go, yeah, how about tomorrow morning? Okay, great. So then we would go and do it. That's ideal, but that's rare. The advisor is usually nearby. As we said, regular interaction means they're close enough to meet together regularly. Okay. The consultant focuses on translation-related issues that they see in the translation, so they're giving advice on translation-related issues. And so their training is usually focusing on those things. Sometimes a consultant gets asked for computer help, and they do give it. Sometimes they say, can you teach me how to do that? And sometimes they do that. But they don't have a lot of time available to do these other training activities. Whereas the advisor is there to give a broader range of translation activities. A broader range of training, everything from doing computers to understanding software to understanding commentaries. So there's a wide range of things that the advisor trains in that the consultant either doesn't have time for or is not in a position to give. Typically, the consultant may or may not speak the national language. Ideally, if you send someone to East Africa, it would be good if they could speak Swahili. It's good if you send someone to Latin America to speak Spanish. If they can't speak Spanish, it's really hard for them to consult with the Spanish team. But typically, they're not as familiar with the target language, the language of translation. The advisor usually knows the national language, and they at least understand about the translation language, the text, the target language, if they don't speak it themselves. And so they either know about it or know the target language. The consultant has a broad range of experience in languages in that country, but possibly also languages in other countries. I've consulted with language teams in Kenya and Tanzania, which are right next to each other. I've consulted in teams in Congo, in Zambia, in Zimbabwe, in Namibia, and in Alaska. And you build up this knowledge in your mind of all of these different translation experiences, and so you get this broad range of translation knowledge where the advisor has knowledge on how do we translate this language. And so their knowledge is deeper on that one language, but it's not as broad as a translation consultant. So if we look at the translation team, what does that look like? So we have the translator. And then the advisor knows a lot of what the translator knows, at least about the work of translation. The consultant knows a lot about translation, how to be an advisor, translation principles, and so they know a lot about the whole area of both the translator and the advisor. And so they have this broad range of experience that goes beyond what the team has, but they all work together. The goal is to produce a good translation. And so if we think, what does the team look like? This is what a team typically looks like. You have people from different cultures. You have male, you have female. And the goal is to all work together to get the translation for a group of people that need to understand and to walk with God. Let me just say a bit about our programs here at DIU, Dallas International University. So the goal is to have job-specific training for the different roles in translation. In one way, this is nothing new. If you're trained to be a teacher, in fact, if you're trained to be a high school teacher, then you need to be proficient in math, then you need to take the math test and qualify to be a math teacher. And then you need to take another test to qualify to be a science teacher. So those are specific things. So this is job-specific training is nothing new. Somehow it is late to catch on with in the translation world. So one of the roles in translation work is descriptive linguistics. That means a person that breaks down the grammar of another language, dictionary work, the sounds, the alphabets, all that. And so they're trained in linguistics. And they're trained in linguistic research, survey. They're trained in writing down and documenting what they find out. Some interaction with people, but not as much. Then we have AL, Applied Linguistics, with the Bible Translation Concentration. And so this one, they get trained in both linguistics and translation. So it's a linguistics degree with translation added to it so that they can start in on the linguistic side and then later they can transition over to the translation side. And we've seen that happen in a number of places where I've worked. You get this type of degree when you anticipate going to an area that they need the language developed. Do they have an alphabet? No. Therefore, we need a person who's gifted in linguistics and Bible translation. Do they have a dictionary? Yes. Okay, we don't need that. So you anticipate going and doing some linguistics and some language development in the process of doing the translation work. So some interaction with people in the linguistics phase, a lot more interpersonal interaction with the local people when you get into the translation phase. Okay, the AL in translation advising. So we have applied linguistics in translation advising. So we have a special degree just for that. And so they're trained in all these things. They are trained in linguistics and translation. It's primarily a translation program with linguistics incorporated into it. So we have about 3 or 4 linguistics courses and about 7 or 8 translation courses. Working in an area where there is already an established alphabet, the language has been developed. Primary function is to serve on a translation team. and be that resource. And they have to remember, being a translator, a mother tongue translator in a country like Kenya or Tanzania or Indonesia or Malaysia, it's really, really challenging work for these men and women who come not from a translation background and jump in, and you are the translator for your language. It's really, really difficult. And the more we can offer help to them, the more we can get them people to support them, like advisors, it just works better. So the very basic function of the training is to help them to be able to do that so that they can flatten out the learning curve of the national translators. Specific jobs. And so as people are considering what do they do here at DIU, which degree should they take, which role suits that person the best, their gifting, their strengths, their non-strengths, their personal bents or preferences, what do you enjoy the most? What brings you the most satisfaction? I get a lot of satisfaction out of being able to communicate to someone in their language. All the more have God communicate well to them in their language. And I just really get a lot of job satisfaction out of that. So if I can't do translation, I get to talk about translation, and I get excited about talking about translation. Okay, what role has God called you to? Another question that I ask people. What led you here in the first place? What does God want you to do, or what is your part in God's mission to extend his kingdom around the world? Roles can change. People get into translation and they decide this isn't for me, I can go to something else. Or they get into linguistics and they say, linguistics is not my thing, and they can get into something else. Sometimes they don't change. So roles can change along the way. And this is that verse that we mentioned in Ephesians. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them. And Hebrews 12:1, therefore, since we have a great cloud of witnesses, let us run the race with endurance. What race? The race that God has called you to. He's called you to one, and he's called other people to others. So what is your race that God is calling you to run, and what has he gifted you with in order to see that you succeed in running that race? Thank you.
This is Dr. George Payton in his teaching on Bible translation. This is session number 5, Roles in Translation.